OTB AM.
With Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow.
Let's turn our attention to football. Daniel Harris is with us this morning. Daniel, good morning to you.
Hiya.
There's lots to talk about, and the sound of the whining from the managers of the Premier League is going to be the background music for the next few days, asking why the hell do we need international football at all? And, you know, a lot of people have sympathy with that, but some of our countries actually really need it.
It's the reason why we're having so much international football now isn't because just because. It's because the associations are short of money. And I think what ultimately probably comes down to a problem of redistribution, in that there's so much money swimming about in football. And yeah, it would be better if it was distributed better so that the players weren't forced through a succession of almost totally meaningless games, meaning they get injured. But it is difficult because what we've ended up with in football is the domination of the Champions League teams, and that's not a good thing. So it's kind of all these competing interests, none of which are altruistic and none of which are pure. And the ones which win do not necessarily mean they are the ones which are more righteous. So I feel it's unfortunate for the clubs that this is happening to their players. It's absolutely unfortunate for the players that this is happening for them. But the clubs are complicit in us having got to this point also. And the players are the people who are suffering here, and all they're doing is playing football. And the international associations also are suffering because of the primacy of the club game. But at the same time, they need to have been more sensible in not playing three games across a week.
Yeah. And look, they're going to point to the fact that they had no choice because they were trying to make up for stuff. But actually, the problem was that these fixtures exist in the first place in the way that they do. And the redistribution actually is the key point there. If the national associations weren't so broke, they wouldn't be forced to bring the players over. And look, that's a kind of circular argument that we'll end up getting into. One of the immediate things that is worth talking about is the fairly chronic injury list that Liverpool have at the moment through COVID and injuries, some of which are going to be fine. So I think Henderson is not going to play tonight and limped out of the last game, but probably should be okay for the weekend. Salah, Gomez, Thiago, Trent, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Fabinho, and obviously Virgil van Dijk is still out as well. We've long said that this is a squad that can deal with almost anything that football throws at them, including trying to compete in both the Champions League and the Premier League. Maybe the squad, shorn of these players for any significant period of time, suddenly begins to look a bit more human.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I think ultimately what Liverpool have, they have two things that they still have. One of them is Klopp, who is the best manager in the world by far. And the other thing is they have confidence and belief. So they will think that they'll be able to get by this. And I think underpinning that confidence and belief is they have goals. And as long as they've still got those strikers, they will score at least twice in most games, and that will be enough to win most games. Of course, it will make a difference. If they still don't have any decent centre-backs when Champions League gets serious, they will probably not win the Champions League. I think that is fair to say. But they will be able to. It's only a month and a half till they can buy someone, and you know they probably needed another centre back anyway to play with Van Dijk because none of the other options were all that good. So they might have planned to do that in the summer. I guess they'll probably do that in January now if they can find the right one. And even if they can't find the right one, they might do it anyway. So they don't actually have that long to hang in there. And it's really still missing Van Dijk that is the main thing. Ultimately, they're not going to win or not win the league because they don't have Joe Gomez. I wouldn't have thought. Yeah, go on.
No, that was it.
Sorry,
go on.
I was just going to follow up on that point that I think you were going to make anyway, just about Joe Gomez. You feel that there was a drop-off anyway and that an upgrade on Joe Gomez might have been required regardless of fitness?
Yeah, it's not essential. But if you were looking at Liverpool's team and you were thinking, well, where is the weakness? Where should they strengthen? Next to Van Dijk would be the obvious area. So, yeah, they strengthened in midfield in the summer. They strengthened up front in the summer. And Van Dijk's partner is obviously not as good as Van Dijk, whoever it is, whether it's Gomez, whether it's Matip. So that would have been the next place that you would go anyway. And I imagine that would be the place that they will go, and they'll try and go there if they can in January. But finding the right player is difficult because there's a dearth of decent centre-backs, which is one of the reasons people are so obsessed with Van Dijk, who is excellent. I wouldn't want it to be said that I'm not saying Van Dijk isn't excellent. He is. But there was a time kind of 10 years ago where you had John Terry, you had Rio Ferdinand, you had Sol Campbell, and you had Ledley King, and that was just, you had Nemanja Vidic, and that was just in the Premier League. And there aren't centre-backs really in the world of that quality knocking about anymore. So Liverpool's transfer system has worked almost perfectly over the last 5 years or so, where in general, if you think that having a 50% hit rate on players that you buy is pretty good, and Liverpool probably up there around 80-90%, it's incredible. So they would obviously be hoping that they will be able to now go and find the right player, whoever it might be, and that they'll be relying on their system that is working so well to go and find that player. But the pool is probably quite small. And I think the reason the pool with centre-backs is quite small, particularly, apart from the fact that there aren't very many good ones about, is that it doesn't help you immediately to go and buy potential. With a striker, you can go and buy someone who's 22 and they can turn up and they can be brilliant immediately. With centre-backs, I think the market is smaller because that tends not to happen. There are very, very, very few centre-backs who are brilliant from that age. Van Dijk didn't really start doing anything serious till he was mid to late 20s. But then Rio Ferdinand also was a prodigy, but he didn't get properly good until sort of 23, 24. And so the players that you're looking for, the market is immediately restricted. And if the market itself happens to be small, because it goes like that sometimes, then it's quite hard to find someone who you'll be able to rely upon to come in and immediately start doing a job. However, as I mentioned before, Liverpool have confidence and they have Klopp. So coming in to play for Klopp immediately and coming in to play in a team that knows exactly what it is doing and is full of confidence and has that feeling that it really can't be beaten is something that will help any new signing, whoever they are, even if they're not quite the right player.
Yeah, I can totally see that. We did want to talk a little bit about Jack Grealish and just have a little conversation about there's been a little bit of a suspicion around Grealish from the big clubs when the whole world was linking Jadon Sancho at Manchester United over the summer. Grealish was there and nobody really thought about him being one of those players. Like it was mentioned at the start of the year and he signed his new deal and then the conversation disappeared. But clearly in that new deal there is a buyout clause or there is a price that Villa would take. No one really made the case that Grealish was worth that money. And I'm wondering now if after his brilliant start to the season for Villa, followed by, it seems, quite a bit of criticism from the England performance the other night, does English football really understand what Jack Grealish is and how to get the best out of him?
I think a lot of the managers in club football do. I think the problem you're seeing with the England team now is Gareth Southgate doesn't really know what to do. He doesn't think that his defence is that good, which it isn't, but he's also not sure how to balance the team. Because what you're seeing is that adding an extra right back is not necessarily going to give you extra defensive solidity, and it puts you in a situation where you're compromising the strength of the team. So England's strength of the team is clearly going forward. If you look at the attackers they've got Raheem Sterling, they've got Harry Kane, they've got Jadon Sancho, they've got Marcus Rashford, and they've got, if they play 4-3-3, they've got to leave out one of them. And that in itself is a difficult decision. Then behind them, they've got Jack Grealish, they've got Phil Foden, they've got Mason Mount. And you wouldn't really want to be in a situation where you could only pick one of them as well. But Gareth Southgate appears to be backing himself into that corner to still not have a particularly good defence. Now, talk about Jack Grealish. I think what happened with him was that in keeping Villa up, he basically priced himself out of a move in that no one was really going to have 80 million quid to spend on him. So United looked at him, as we know, and they went for Donny van de Beek in the end, who was younger, faster, cheaper, and proven in the Champions League. Now, what he might not have Jack Grealish's attitude, and that is one of the great things about Jack Grealish, is he's not scared, and he's someone who turns up in big moments, and he wants the ball, and he's always prepared to take the ball. And you've seen that for England, you saw it for Villa, where he intervened in that final day of the season. He found a way of making sure that he scored the goal that ended up keeping them up. But he was also someone whose off-the-pitch history was checkered, and he was at an age where you began to wonder if he hasn't resolved it by now, if he was ever going to resolve it. So there's a bit of that. And there's also the fact that I wonder when I watch him play, I think, what is he? So he looks like someone who you would think would be an attacking midfield player, but he's tending to play off the left at the moment. So if you're a team that already has a good left-sided attacker, then you won't necessarily want to buy Jack Grealish. So United have Marcus Rashford, who plays in that area, and they also have various other attackers. So if you're going to sign Jack Grealish, but actually you can't really play him in midfield and you've got to hide him on the left, then I can see why clubs would look twice at him, even though we can see there's a lot of great things that he can do. So it's slightly tricky if he can't play midfield. if he can play in midfield, if he's an attacking midfield player, really, and all he actually needs is better players to play with, then you're looking at a very special talent. But if you're looking at a left winger, then you're generally going to be trying to find someone who can go on the inside or go on the outside and who can score more goals than he will. So it's not easy if he's not a midfield player.
Barney Ronay was writing in The Guardian on Saturday, Daniel, about the superfluous man and how that applies to football in the context of João Félix and how he's finding his feet this year. And he says that we hear that Paul Pogba is lazy, Riyad Mahrez is decorative, Mesut Ozil doesn't want to play. Does the same thing sort of apply to Jack Grealish?
No. I would say in the first instance, Paul Pogba isn't lazy. Like, you don't get to be the phenomenal athlete and footballer that Paul Pogba is if you're lazy. I think the thing with Paul Pogba is that he sometimes plays with a lack of intensity, which is different. And I think that that is not right to say that Paul Pogba's lazy. And it's also that Jack Grealish...
I'm not saying that, sorry, just not what's being said here at all. That's the incorrect challenge that's put out there. And in fact, it is the things that he brings to the game that is sometimes overlooked because there is that wrong perception of being lazy. So that's not being said here. It's just that is okay. The incorrect take that's out there.
So with Jack Grealish, I'd say the difficulty with him as a player again is where he goes, and it's not that people underestimate what he does. If you watch football and you can't see what Jack Grealish does, then you have some fairly significant problems in your life that need someone other than you to sort out. You watch football and you can see what Jack Grealish does, but how you fit Jack Grealish into a team is another thing. And there used to be, well, can you build the team around such and such a player? It's a particularly fond argument in England that definitely goes back as long as I've been watching football. Can you build a team around Glenn Hoddle? And there's some people will say, well, if you have a player like Glenn Hoddle, you have to build the team around Glenn Hoddle. And the other people say, well, if you have to build the team around anyone, then they shouldn't be in the team because everyone should be able to contribute to the team. I think the reality of the Hoddle situation was that you already had Brian Robson. You didn't need to build the team around Glenn Hoddle. You just needed to put him next to Brian Robson and you had an unbelievable midfield. But with Jack Grealish, the difference is you wonder where he plays. So I don't see any reason why he couldn't play as a midfield three. But you could also argue that if you have a player as good as Jack Grealish, you don't want to burden them with defending. And you're kind of seeing it now with United and Bruno Fernandes. Bruno Fernandes could definitely play as a midfield number eight. He's got the athletic ability, he's got the physical capacity, he's got the desire to run up and down. The question is whether you want to ask someone to run like that, to run up and down, or whether you want them preserving their energy to affect the game. And I think with Villa, what happened was Dean Smith realised that he had this one player, particularly once John McGinn got injured, he had this one player who was miles better than anyone else that he had. So what he did was he put him in such a situation where he said, OK, well, he'll put him on the left wing because that way he doesn't have to do a lot of defending. And it means that you get Grealish the ball. Grealish will be fresh when he receives the ball and you make it work like that. Alan Ball did it at Southampton with Matthew Letizia as well, which is not necessarily a relationship that you would ever imagined working. But he realised that Letizia was the best player that Southampton had. So he said, told him didn't have to do any running, got two players in there to do Letizia's running so that they get the ball to Letizia whenever possible. But when you play for England, the players around you are better. And whether Jack Grealish is good enough to say, well, you just hang about over there, that's not so much the case because there are loads of other good players. So what Gareth Southgate needs to probably do, I mean, you need a squad ultimately, but it would be difficult to balance a midfield that had Grealish and Foden in it. So you might need to make a decision which one of those two it's going to be. Or as they did at the weekend, they played two up front. They played Grealish basically off Harry Kane. And then that to me doesn't look like the best way of doing it. I can't see a way where I think that Jack Grealish is worth Marcus Rashford and Raheem Sterling or Marcus Rashford and Jadon Sancho. But if they can find a way of getting Grealish into a three-man midfield, then I'm fairly sure that Grealish would be more than capable of doing that. The question is whether you think that Grealish is better than Phil Foden for me, and I'm not sure that that's the case.
4-2-3-1, where he plays in the three?
Yeah, he could play in the three, but again, like you're deciding between Grealish and Foden. I think Grealish is great. I love watching Grealish play. I love his attitude. I love his arrogance. I don't think he's better than Foden, and I don't think he's going to be better than Foden. So what I would be trying to do is I would be trying to get Foden into that team probably before I got Grealish into that team. Although I guess you could run a line that in 2020, so in 2021, sorry, next summer, you could maybe think that Grealish is, Foden won't quite be as good as Grealish yet. But I think that Foden is going to be one of the best players in the world. I think that Grealish is going to be an excellent player, is an excellent player, but I'm not sure he's going to be quite that good.
I did want to just briefly talk about the other thing that happens over international football is footballers go home, give interviews, the interviews get mistranslated, the whole world loses its mind, and then the proper translation comes out and everybody goes, oh, OK, Paul Pogba just has friends in France that he likes hanging out with. It's not that he automatically compared his situation at Manchester United with the situation with the French national team. Is there anything in this, or is there, like, cause I actually watched a little bit of the interview where he's doing its TV interview, which are, you know, it's very hard to misinterpret a TV interview. At least it was broadcast. It wasn't like this has been translated first by the journalist and then again into a different language. So when the story came out, apparently Pogba had kind of, by dint of not actually saying things were bad at Manchester, but by lavishing praise on how great things were in France, insulted the entire city of Manchester and the legion of Manchester United fans around the world?
I don't know. I can see both sides, and it's often the case with stuff that Pogba says. Part of me thinks, why don't you just shut up? And part of me thinks, you can say what you like. I think that it doesn't look good to be talking about those kinds of things, but if Pogba doesn't care, why should I care? Ultimately, it doesn't really come down to what he says. It comes down to what he does. And I can understand why he's unhappy that he's not playing. I think that if he's not looking at his own performances as the reason why he's not playing and therefore not happy, then that would be a mistake. And I'm sure that he would happily leave United, and United would happily have him leave if an arrangement could be found that got United enough money and got him a club he wanted to go to. And so ultimately, like, I don't spend too much time analysing what Paul Pogba does and doesn't say, because I'm 41 years old. And he's a footballer, saying what he likes and doing what he likes. So if you ask me if I'd be happy for Paul Pogba to leave United as a United supporter, I would say yes. Would I be happy for Paul Pogba to leave to go and find a club and a team that suits him better? Also yes. Paul Pogba's an amazing talent. I want to see Paul Pogba get the most from his talent. And what Paul Pogba needs is a slightly different environment to the environment he has at United. So I'd be more than happy to go and see him do that elsewhere. And I think that what he needs is he needs players around him who are different to the players he has around him at United. I think it didn't look that way at the time. It didn't look that way when Bruno Fernandes arrived. But looking at it now, because after lockdown, what happened was teams weren't fit and United turned up and they looked to be fitter than everyone else and stronger than everyone else. But also, because teams weren't fit, it meant that United could carry a midfield of Pogba and Fernandes. As other teams got stronger, and you saw it when United played West Ham and Southampton at the end of the season, they started running harder, putting United under a bit more pressure, and United struggled to carry, not to carry Fernandes and Pogba in midfield. And what's happening now is that United are playing Scott McTominay and Fred, and they're running about and allowing Bruno Fernandes just to do his thing. And that's what's working. Yeah. And if you add Paul Pogba into that, you're going to have a slightly different balance. And it's hard to see how that's going to change, because Fernandes is ultimately a better player than Pogba. Yeah. And his numbers are better than Paul Pogba's. And so it's hard to see where Paul Pogba goes at United. But if he were to go to PSG, which looks like the obvious move for him now, they have legs in midfield, but they lack a bit of class. And that looks to me to be a much better fit for Pogba, where they'll win the league games anyway, and then he can do his thing in the Champions League in particular, where he'll have a lot of legs around him and he will be in the Bruno Fernandes role. And that is probably what will work best for him, I think.
Daniel, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
All right, see you again.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show, is live from 7:30 every morning. Listen on the OTB Sports app or ask Alexa, Siri or Google to play OTB Sports Radio to start your day with the latest sports news and reaction. Subscribe by searching OTB AM on your podcast app.